Hello, everyone, and welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm Scott Livingston, and today I'm honored to have Stephen Campanelli as my guest. Stephen is a highly regarded camera operator in Hollywood who has been working at his craft since the early 80s. He was an early adopter of the Steadicam, a technology that revolutionized the film industry. And as an early adopter, Stephen was himself a revolutionary in his field. He's been behind the camera in more than 60 films in his career, including Oscar-winning films The Million Dollar Baby, Mystic River, and Oscar-nominated films Bridges of Madison County, Flags of Our Fathers, and Letters from Iwo Jima. He's been nominated for the prestigious Camera Operator of the Year Award 3 times, winning in 2012, and further being honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Society of Camera Operators in 2016. He recently began his directorial career, helming 3 recent productions, including the highly acclaimed Indian Horse, which just opened April 13th of this year. I've invited Stephen on my show because he is an absolute character human being, loyal and professional, and his story is effectively one of hard work meets special circumstances where the idea of you can really achieve your dreams is clearly exemplified. Welcome, Stephen.
Hi, welcome. Welcome. Hi, thanks, Scott. Thanks for
No problem. Thank you for coming. I'm going to pitch you a fairly easy question to start with, which is you grew up in Montreal, so you're a Habs fan. Who was your favorite Montreal Canadian?
Oh, wow. Well, growing up in Montreal, I have to say Ken Dryden was my favorite Montreal Canadian ever because I was a goalie also. So I idolized him, and he was just such a great person too. And obviously such an amazing goalie. So he was my man.
I didn't know you played goaltender. That's a good little piece of information. So. Until what age did you play hockey as a goalie?
Oh, boy, I guess so it was about 18, I guess, 19, 20, something like that. It just started getting, the players got better and better. I was just kind of average, so I just thought, I'm not going to make a career out of this, so I might as well try something else.
What was your, do you have a recollection of the first time or the time you ever went to the Forum to watch a hockey game?
I don't remember the first time, but I do remember obviously going into that hallowed ground, which is just incredible. You know, that it's such an amazing venue, and it's sad that it's gone right now. It's a real shame, but it was amazing watching all those banners up in the rafters, and I still believe to this day they're the winningest sports franchise in history. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, they're impressive in a very impressive organization over the years. Yeah. I wonder, what did it feel like actually to sort of open your movie in Montreal in that building when you came back a month or so ago? That must have been an interesting feeling.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. You know, you can still feel the spirits, I guess you call it, from all the Montreal Canadiens and all the hockey games there. So it was kind of cool to have my film open up there, and it's a great cinema there too, so I'm really glad it was shown on a proper screen, you know.
Do you have fond memories of, I mean, you've been away from Montreal for a long time, but do you have special memories of Montreal as a boy growing up there?
Oh, it's a great city. You know, I grew up my whole life in Notre-Dame-de-Grâce in NDG, and you know, my parents are still there, my sister, a lot of my relatives are there, so yeah, it means a lot to me. It's just a great city. It's a great big small city. You know, I miss that. I miss the characters, the neighborhoods. You know, that kind of thing. Growing up there, and then moving to Vancouver, and then eventually to Los Angeles, and now I'm back in Vancouver. But you know, LA is just so big and spread out, and Montreal is just such a great city that you can get around so easily. And except with the construction now for the next 4 years, that's like crazy.
You miss the bagels, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. The bagels, the smoked meat, exactly. The authentic poutine, you know. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I want to ask you about your dad and your mom's influence on you. I mean, you come from a hardworking Italian family. Your dad was a gardener by trade, a wonderful man, and your mom was a really great home mom who took care of you guys and stuff. And also went to school and got her education late in her life. How did they inspire you as a person, two of them?
Yeah, both amazing, amazing parents. They're very, very blessed, you know, to have such hardworking parents, you know, and throughout their whole lives, they didn't make a lot of money, but everything they did make was for their family, for their kids, you know. And my dad worked really, really hard, manual labor in the hot, humid Montreal summers, and the cold, brutal winters. And I worked with him many, many summers and realized how hard he did work and how hard it was for me too, as a young kid, to work. And, you know, seeing someone that's older do all that strenuous labor is really tough. So it gives you a great appreciation on what parents do for their kids, you know. And I know kids never appreciate it until they're older in life, you know. So it's the hard part of being a parent, is you never get that appreciation until much later. But yeah, they did everything for us kids. My sister Monica and I, you know, we had everything we could need, you know, went to private school and all that, had the best food whenever we could, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a real testament to them that we turned out so great, I think.
Were they at all influential in sort of your career getting into film, or was that something, how did that get inspired in you getting into film?
I think it was inadvertently they inspired me. A couple of things is they had bought a Super 8 movie camera, which back then was quite a big deal and not very cheap. But I think my dad really wanted to, and my mom wanted to document our growing up. So they made these Super 8 movies of our childhood. And it was great that we have that. I mean, to this day, I had it all transferred to digital, and it's great just seeing us as kids, because a lot of kids don't have that. So it was nice. But what happened is I took that camera and I started to make movies from it. And just with my friends and recreating different scenes, we made a 3-minute version of The Godfather, you know, it was pretty fun. And my mom's love for the cinema, like she, when she was living in Italy, she used to, because they couldn't afford it. It was right after Second World War, and they couldn't afford to go to the movies. So my mom would sneak in and watch movies, and it would just inspire her, you know, to see this Hollywood life and what it's like and how glamorous it was. And so I think maybe that's imparted her love of cinema with me too. But no one in my family was in the business, so it was kind of an odd choice as a career. But you know, I followed through with it, and turned out pretty good, I think.
Mm-hmm. Were you a big movie watcher yourself when you were younger? Did you go to the theater a lot?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it was a great time to grow up. You know, it's when, obviously, when Star Wars first came out, and, you know, The Exorcist and Field of Dreams and all these amazing films that come out. And it was an event, you know, we had no internet. We would go to movies. That was the thing. It was like highly anticipated on a weekend where you'd go to a movie with all your buddies and go to the cinema and all that stuff. So it was a really big part of my growing up, for sure.
Did your dad's work ethic rub off on you, in a sense, in how you apply your craft and stuff?
Yeah, I think definitely it did. You know, just hard work and just never complaining about it. You know, it's not an easy job to be a gardener, a landscaper anywhere, but in Montreal, where, you know, you have those hot and humid summers, it's so brutal. Or winters. And I remember him, you know, knocking on my door at 3 a.m. and we'd have to go and shovel snow, and it was -20 out. It wasn't a single soul awake, you know, and we were the only people out there. And it's really an incredible experience. And you just realize that's what you do. You know, the Campanelli name was his reputation, and that was very, very important to him, as it is to me. So everything I do and I touch, I want to make sure I do it right, because it is my name in the end that goes on the screen, and I'm responsible for it. So yeah, definitely his work ethic definitely influenced me, for sure.
That's awesome. I remember, you know, for me, some of my fond memories of you walking up and down the back steps with your Steadicam when you were first using it. I'm just wondering how you, there was a bit of a leap of faith at that point in your life and career to jump into that technology. As I said in the introduction, it wasn't something that was common in the industry where it was coming out. And just take me through the concept for you of the risk taking opportunity that you had, because, you know, part of what I want to give the listeners is sometimes in life you have to take these opportunities to try something. You don't know how they're going to work out, and you just take that leap of faith and it works out. And I know you took a leap of faith to purchase one, and maybe you can take me through that, sort of the feeling, the decision making, and why you did that at that time.
It was, I'm trying to think of the year. It was like the early 80s, where Garrett Brown, the inventor of the Steadicam, I'll always never forget this. He walked up the stairs of the Academy Awards. He won a Technical Achievement Award for his invention of the Steadicam. And I went, wow, that is a very cool tool. And right after that, the movie Halloween came out. And I went to go see that. And what amazed me by that tool, the Steadicam, was he basically scared you and entertained you by moving the camera in such a fluid way, along with music, to create this movie. And basically, I thought a revolutionary new product had been invented to be able to tell a story with a camera. And that had never been done before. You know, its first use was Bound for Glory. And then Rocky, the famous shot of going up the stairs with Sylvester Stallone. But Halloween was an entire movie that was literally done on the Steadicam. So it was a very cool tool for me. So that, to me, influenced me. I wanted to buy the Steadicam. Told my parents, you know, I said, I'm going to go to Rockport, Maine. So it was only a, you know, short drive from Montreal. And I took a course from Garrett Brown, the inventor. You know, he was a rock star back then to camera people. So it was quite an achievement. Spent a week there, and then came home to Montreal and told my parents that I was in love. And they're like, what? What girl? You know, like, oh, it's a piece of equipment. And I'm like, wow. So they lent me some money. And then my fantastic bank manager at the CIBC gave me a really great bank loan to buy this equipment. And, you know, it changed my life. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. Those opportunities that change your life are quite interesting sometimes. And I think I wanted to reflect on that with you, because it's not always easy for people to make those decisions to go and borrow money or to take a leap of faith that it's all going to work out at the end of the day. So you started working with that and playing with that in your craft. And, you know, the story of your interconnection with Clint is one I know you tell quite often, but maybe you can just say why was Clint your favorite actor in the first place? Like, when did you fall in love with Clint Eastwood?
Oh boy. And just growing up as a boy, you know, watching his movies, you know, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly and all those great spaghetti westerns, A Few Dollars More and all that. And then the Dirty Harry series. And he was just such a cool dude. You know, I don't know, for lack of a better word, he was just the coolest guy. And I think, wow, what a great role model. You know, he was very private. You didn't hear a lot of negative, you didn't hear any negative things about him. And so growing up as a kid, I had posters on the wall of The Good, the Bad and the Ugly and Dirty Harry and all that. And I actually had a dog named Clint, who was an amazing dog. It was incredible. And I thought, well, what better honor to name a dog after your favorite actor?
I don't think I ever told you that, but he was my favorite actor as well when I was younger. So it's kind of interesting that you ended up running into him in the way you did.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing. And I always tell people it's to dream. Dream big. You know, I dreamt of meeting Clint Eastwood one day, and you know, I obviously surpassed that goal and ended up working with him for 24 years. So
yeah, well, it's that's sort of what I mean about this concept of having done something, you know, setting your goals and moving forward and having something that, you know, you believed in. And you know, this idea of achieving whatever you want to achieve, do you look at that sort of equation, achieving a goal, more as just, I'm going to put my head down and I'm going to focus on what I'm going to do and good things will happen? Or did you actually in some sense try to orchestrate it? Or are you more of just, it's going to happen and I'm going to have faith in the work that I do and the craft that I, my craftsmanship?
Yeah, it was more of that. You know, everybody has different levels, but for me it was just I'm going to make it happen someday. I don't know how. I had many opportunities to meet Clint. My very first job in Montreal was the professional job was Meatballs 3. We were filming in Hudson, and I was a camera trainee, you know, and I wasn't getting paid. I think it was like $50 a week or something silly. And Clint was in town to premiere his film Tightrope at the Montreal World Film Festival. And because I had directed a student film as my thesis at Concordia, it won first prize in the Canadian Student Film Festival. So I got invited to the gala party, just showing Canadian talent, I guess, whatever, in Montreal. But it was a night that I was working on Meatballs 3, and it was my very first job. And I did not go to the gala to meet my idol, Clint Eastwood. I literally said, no, it's, you know, I'm work ethic. It's my first film. I'm not going to leave the middle of the shoot. And my friends were like, you're crazy. You're going to meet your idol. This is the guy you want to meet. And I said, someday I'll meet him. And they're like, oh, you're nuts, man. And how are you going to ever meet Clint Eastwood, a kid from Montreal, you know? And one day, you know, I moved to Vancouver after that. So I didn't get to see him. And then he was in Calgary in 1992 doing Unforgiven. And I thought, wow, it's only an hour flight. I can go see Clint Eastwood and meet him finally. A lot of my friends were working on the movie. I even applied to work on it, but they had told me that I didn't have enough feature film credits. I had a lot of TV credits on my resume. So they said, you know, too bad. And I was like, ah, darn it, or whatever. And then 2 years later, I got the call from his cinematographer to come and do Bridges of Madison County. So it was very, you know, it happened. I just made it happen. I just kept working hard, saying, I have an end goal. I'm going to get there someday. And eventually I did, you know. So I feel very blessed that I got there finally. But I kind of knew it.
I remember working for the first time in the National Hockey League and it being, you know, something that was a boyhood dream to be a hockey player, but I didn't make that work out. I ended up working in the business. And I never really felt a particular nervousness about that. I'm curious, when you first encountered Clint and first worked on the movie, were you able to be calm and just to deliver yourself, or was that kind of stressful in the beginning for you to do that when you finally met him?
Well, it was a bit of both, you know. I kind of had an eerie calmness about me, but definitely it was, you know, you're meeting your idol. Like, first of all, this was before the internet, and you're like, you don't know much about him. He could have been, you know, not a nice person, and I would have been completely devastated that my boyhood idol wasn't a nice guy. But he exceeded your expectations. He's such a nice guy, such a gentleman. And so that was the first thing. I was like, wow, this guy's great. And then, you know, I was very nervous and babbling on and saying, Mr. Eastwood this, Mr. Eastwood that. And he stopped me mid-conversation and he just said, you know, call me Clint. And it was just like, okay. So I was a nervous energy of meeting my idol. And, you know, and then in the first few days of work, you know, I'm working with Meryl Streep and Clint Eastwood. I was like, holy crap. You know, and I don't know if we mentioned the film, but Bridges of Madison County. And it was just like, wow, for a first film, what a way to start. And slowly he just made me more and more at ease, and I got more comfortable with him. And, you know, I thought that was going to be my only film. I thought, wow, I've got my goal. I got him to sign you know, the clapper and some posters and things like that. I thought, well, that's great. I got to meet my boyhood idol, and I'll move on with my life. And then, you know, a year or two later, he called me again, did another movie, and now it's been 24 years, and I'm in Atlanta right now about to start our 22nd film.
Wow. Some people, like, it's interesting, the relationship. You and I have known each other for a long time, and I went into professional hockey and you went into the entertainment business, and they're both in some ways very similar in the sense that people's perception of it from outside looking in is the glamour, the glitz, the, you know, the production, all that stuff. But you and I both worked in sort of call it the same domain in the sense that you're driving the delivery of it at the end of the day. Right. And, you know, at the end of the day, how do you sort of derive your sense of fulfillment and success in any given project and your sense of how you contribute to that? Is it by the quality of your work? Is it the quality of the end product? What, you know, how do you feel, sort of look at how you've been successful in what you do?
I think it's, again, it goes back to, you know, my mom and dad, just a work ethic, you know, and being proud of what you do and working hard. And I guess in a way being a perfectionist too, you know, you have to let it go at some point. Obviously you can't keep fiddling with stuff, but eventually you got to go, this is not as good as it's going to get, but you're as proud of it as you can be. And that's been my work ethic in all the movies. And that's why I've been successful in the movies, because not only working with Clint, but with other directors, I get repeat calls. They want me back. They say, complimentary. You're great at your job. Best I've ever worked with. But it's also a personality thing too. You know, it's like you're spending 12 hours a day with someone. You want it to be someone you like and someone you can joke with and someone you can have intelligent conversation with. So it's a bit of everything. I always tell kids that ask me for advice in the film business, they're like, what's the key to succeed? And it's all of that. It's just hard work ethic, being who you are, being personable, because people need to like you because they want to be around you. You know, the egos are left at the door. There's no room for egos, although there are a lot, I'm sure, in your line of work and mine. But you just got to just go, yeah, that's not me. And, you know, if you want to have an ego, that's fine, but it's not me. But I think it's just quality control, I guess, is a good two words to sum it down, is that you want the quality of your name and your work to always speak for you.
How did your work change for you when you became a dad? Was it more difficult? How did you invest yourself in being a father? Because You know, I know you're busy, and that's it's not an easy thing to juggle, sort of thing. Was it tough?
Yeah, it is tough, you know, because at the time I had my daughter Michaela, we were in California, and California was going through a rough patch because no one was filming there, and you always had to go out of town to make movies. And so my wife and I decided that I'd be the breadwinner and I'd go off and make the movies, and then she would take care of our daughter, and which was a great relationship. But the problem was, is I was away a lot. You know, I'd miss a lot of key moments, you know, and I wasn't there for 3 months. So it was really tough. But what did change in me personally was that before, just as we were talking about, I would do things for myself to make myself proud. But now I was doing it for someone else. I was doing it for my daughter. I wanted to make her proud of her daddy, you know, and it's like, and it's been great because now that she's older, she's a teenager, she's going to be 15 in a month. The cool thing is that she is proud of her dad. She saw Indian Horse at the Toronto Film Festival where it had a world premiere, and she loved it. And she just, you know, was very moved emotionally by it and thought, you know, what a great film, Dad. And it's very cool. Or even when I work on a movie as a camera operator and she's seen it, she goes, yeah, that's my dad that worked on that. So that makes me feel that much more. So it's not for me anymore. I'm doing this. It's for her. I want to leave my legacy of being Michaela's dad and the cool things that I've done in my life. So.
That's awesome. One of the things that I do in my podcast is I discovered a book a few years ago, and I actually discovered my purpose out of the book was a combination of astrology meets numerology. And I'm not a big astrology nut, but I had this saying taped to my desktop. And basically when I went to read the book's chapter, the saying was in my purpose statement, and I was kind of floored. So one of the things I've been doing with my guests is reading them their purpose statement from the book. So you're in Aries 3, and it's to take your place as a leader, anxious to enlarge your influence by convincing others your philosophy is the one to be followed. You need an impossible task to conquer. This will test your beliefs and make them stronger. The saying that went with it actually is, Ilsa, I'm not being noble. The problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. Here's looking at you, kid. Rick, played by Humphrey Bogart, which is kind of ironic because it was a Hollywood line. Yeah. And then it goes, personal needs don't stand a chance in the presence of a higher cause. The earthly desires of Aries 3 are diminished in the face of a greater need. And when I read that, I first read it, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not sure this links completely with Stephen. But then after watching your recent production with Indian Horse and how you got sort of really taken by, you know, the need to get that story out and for people to hear that story, it's sort of, I sort of connected with the fact that, you know, first of all, you've been a leader in what you've done in terms of choosing to step into the Steadicam world and to really probably craft your industry. You've probably been you're a very modest guy, but I'm sure you've been a very influential person in that. But now it seems like maybe you're starting to find your true purpose in the sense that with your directorial growth, you've chosen to take on an actual versus just making a film. You took on something that was society oriented issue. So I thought that was really cool.
No, cool. That's great. Yeah, there's a few things there as you read it. I went, oh yeah, that's true. That's true. And then some that's not. But those things are always like that. There's always something in there that
exactly kind of takes you for a little bit of a loop. But it's a fun little piece.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
So you're now starting to direct, and how is that? First of all, how did you come to a point in your life when you decided you wanted to do that, and how has that transition been for you?
Well, I think I always wanted to be a director. Like after I did my student film at Concordia and it won a couple of awards, I thought, wow, this is great. I'd be a director. But you know, you don't just jump into being a director. I mean, nowadays you can with all YouTube and all this stuff, but back then it just wasn't a thing. And maybe it was. Maybe I missed the boat. I don't know. But being a cameraman, I loved being a cameraman. It was the best job on the set because you're working right in front of the actors. You're telling the story with the camera. You know, and buying the Steadicam changed my life. So I was like, yeah, this is really cool. So, you know, I just kept doing it, but I knew I wanted to direct. And then when I got to work with Clint in 1994, it was just like, wow, this is my dream come true. And then I just kept working with Clint and others. But it was the greatest job, and they paid me well, and I couldn't complain. But I always knew in my mind I wanted to direct. And then finally, was it 4 years ago, I finally got the opportunity, and I said, oh, yeah, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. And it is. I love doing it. I've directed three things now, and I'm looking for my fourth. And I think it's the greatest besides camera operating, it's the greatest job on set, because you make all the decisions. You get to work with the actors. You get to direct them. You get to work with a great crew and empower them all and make them kind of see your vision and help you with your vision. So I love the directorial aspect of it. And most of it I learned from Clint, you know, because he has a really easy demeanor on set. He's great with his actors. He's great with his crew. And the word I used was empowering. He does. He empowers you to do your best for him, but you're also doing the best for yourself too, you know.
What have you learned from him that you're transcending into your style or your craft as a director?
I think just telling the story. He always said that's where it starts. You get a great story, and a lot of it will take care of itself. You get a great cast, you get a great crew. So it just piece, you know, you're an architect basically. You're building a building. You need a strong foundation, and you work your way up to the top. You know, and that's exactly what I've taken from him. But also, not to get in the way of a good story or a great performance. You know, there's a lot of directors that do meddle in great performances, and sometimes it weakens it. Sometimes it makes it better, but most of the time it confuses actors. So he just lets things be a lot, and things work out usually for him, and kind of the way I do too now. But I think I get a little more involved than he does, but it just kind of, it's an osmosis of what I've learned from him and other directors. So I've got my own style, yet it is, you know, very Clint Eastwood based, mm-hmm. I guess, you know.
From outside looking in, my impression of your working relationship in the situation is that, you know, Clint values loyalty and hard work and quality and stuff like that. So, you know, when you look at the business acumen and the world out there, sort of to transcend what you've learned to any medium, you know, it seems like the belief system of how you treat the people in your organization, loyalty to them, loyalty to your craft is a big thing about how my interpretation of how Clint works with you. And then you obviously transcend that forward. Do you believe those are really important points in having success as a team that puts together a movie, or a team that puts together, you know, even a sports event? You know, do you see those things as being really important attributes of success?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, the old expression, you know, you're only as weak as your weakest link, you know, and it's important that your links should all be very strong and tight, and that you're all looking towards the same common goal. Mm-hmm. So again, it's almost the same ethic that you have, work, strong work ethic, a respect for others, a common passion and drive for what you're doing. I think a lot of people in this day and age are working at jobs that they're not really happy about, but they've just got to do it to make a living for their family. And I get it. That's important because you're putting family first. But if you can work in a job that you love the most, and you're, you know, making an income and you're supporting your family and all that, you know, it's the greatest thing on earth. So as long as you surround yourself with like-minded people, I think you'll always succeed. And that's, you know, the key to success mm-hmm. in life, I think, is to just surround yourself with great people and don't always think you can do it yourself, because you can't, you know. Maybe some people do, but I don't think I can. I need everyone I can around me to help make a great movie. Like Indian Horse was a real collaboration with a lot of great people. And I couldn't have done it without the support of the indigenous community. I learned so much making this movie, and without them, I would have never been able to, you know, make this movie. So mm-hmm. I'm very happy that I had that chance.
How do you see your, call it responsibility, or yourself moving forward now that you're older, you've been in the industry for a long time, in terms of how you mentor or support the growth and development of younger people who are coming into your field? Is that something that you take energy towards or do?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, because I felt when I was a kid in film school, you know, at Concordia, that we didn't have a lot of role models. Well, we did, but they didn't come and visit us. They didn't come see us in the school. They didn't come and inspire us. You know, the one guy I remember is a lifelong friend, Glenn McPherson, who came to our school, and he was a camera assistant, and I ended up working with him in my very first job, and he shot my very first film, a cinematographer on Momentum. But he was such a great influence because he was telling us what it was like in the real world. So I have gone back to my old high school, Loyola High School, and I've talked to the media program, and I love giving back. I get emails every other day or so from kids that, you know, want that inspiration, or how can I succeed? How can I get in the business? You know, and I just tell them the same thing that we've been talking about. It's like your podcast is leave your mark. You've got to make sure that you leave like a legacy or some kind of a trail for others to follow and to inspire them. So I just tell them, you know, work hard, be a good person. you know, be creative, find something new that hasn't been done before, just something that you can, you know, make sure that people remember you. And I think that's part of what your podcast is and what a lot of humanity and life should be. It should always leave your mark and, you know, go down that road. Like instead of following the path, make the path, you know?
That's awesome. Well, to wrap this thing up, I'm going to hit you with one more question. That is, when you finally perish from this world, which hopefully won't be for a long time to come, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, that's a good question. Wow. I think I'd like to be remembered as first and foremost, a good person that people would remember fondly and with a smile on their face, not sadness, you know. I think when people do pass, you know, it's obviously very sad, but also you want to recollect on all the great positive things that happened in their life, you know? So that'd be the first thing. But second, you know, that about my legacy of movies, that I've entertained you, I've made you laugh, made you cry with my movies, whatever, not just the directorial ones, but the camera operating ones, you know, because you look back and you go, yeah, a lot of people saw this movie. A lot of people were entertained. A lot of people got away for 2 hours of their life to go see this movie. And so that is another legacy. And then, you know, just being a family person, you know, the Campanelli name and, you know, that kind of thing is to just carry it on. I've got obviously tons of cousins in Montreal that are all proud of me, and I want to make sure that it stays that way. So, you know, I think that would be the best thing. And then again, just the legacy of my daughter, like to make her proud of her daddy and always carry that torch on to her kids and vice versa and just forever and ever, you know, so.
Yeah, awesome.
Leave your mark.
Perfect way to end. Thank you very much, buddy. Thanks for taking the time. I know it's your day off, and I appreciate you taking some time with me. So
no worries, Scott. I really appreciate it. And keep up the good work. It's such a good message you're leaving on your podcast. And I really encourage everyone to listen to you and keep following you.
Thanks, man. Be good. Have a good rest of your day.
You too, man. Take care. Bye.